Hello and welcome. This is Pryalia, the History of Ukraine podcast. In the previous episode, we talked about the stages of formation of the early Slavs, their settlement in Central and Eastern Europe, as well as mentioned the Slavic tribal alliances that emerged in the first millennium AD in Ukraine. One of such tribes was the Polans that lived in the Middle Dnieper on the border of forest and forest steppe. It was on their lands that the city of Kyiv arose, which later became the most important center of the Eastern Slavs, the capital of the state of Kievan Rus. The legend recorded in the tale of bygone years, the earliest Slavic chronicle in Ukraine, tells of three brothers, the eldest of whom was called Ki, and their sister Libid. According to legend, they founded the city on the slopes of the Dnieper and named it Kyiv in honor of his older brother. According to scientists, this event most likely occurred in the late 5th century AD, as evidenced by archaeological finds. Boris Rybakov identified the legendary Ki with the ant ruler Hilbudi, who was mentioned in the Byzantine chronicles of the time. Over time, other cities in the region were growing, such as Liubech, Chernihiv, Vitachiv. It is no coincidence that these lands were later named by the Scandinavians Gadariki, or the country of cities. The ant-tribal alliance was soon finally defeated, while the influence of the Khazar Khaganate began to grow in the northern Black Sea region. The Khazar state made another attempt to unite under a single government both nomadic and settled peoples of the region. The Khazars themselves were unique because they were Turkic-speaking but had a sedentary lifestyle. Due to close ties with the Byzantine Empire, the Khazars were able to establish a governing apparatus and maintain stability in the region for two centuries. Sources indicate that Kyiv came under the influence of the Khazar Khaganate, as did the tribes of Polans, Severians, Derevlians, and a number of neighboring peoples who paid tribute to them. In the 9th century, the Khazars got serious competitors for dominance in Eastern Europe. The Vikings began their expansion from the Scandinavian peninsula, and it became a real storm for the whole of Europe as well as Middle East at that time. Their conquests destroyed hundreds of settlements. Over time, the Vikings began not only to plunder, but also to take control of large areas. In particular, the Vikings played a crucial role in the formation of the Duchy of Normandy, the Kingdom of England, and the Kingdom of Sicily. The Vikings were not only brutal conquerors, but also skilled merchants and experienced mercenaries. Often these three incarnations were not mutually exclusive, but organically combined. And this prompted them to establish contacts with the most powerful and richest states of the time, the Byzantine Empire and the Arab Caliphate. The shortest routes from Scandinavia to these countries went through the river systems of Eastern Europe. Through the Volga and the Caspian Sea, the Vikings could get to the Middle East. Through the Dnieper and the Black Sea, to the Byzantine capital of Constantinople and Asia Minor. It was here that they could get the income they needed by robbery, trade, or military service. Here, in Eastern Europe, they became known as Varangians. In the middle of the 9th century, one of the Varangian families began to establish their control over the trade route to Constantinople, or the road from Vikings to Greeks, as it was called in the tale of bygone years. Its leader was Rurik, who is often identified with Rorik of Jutland, who served two Carolingian rulers. Rurik created the center of his power in the land east to the Baltic Sea, near Neva and Ladoga rivers in modern northwest Russia. Here the city of Novgorod arose, which became an important trade center in the Baltic region and the capital of the merchant Novgorod Republic later. After Rurik's death, his business was continued by his brother Oleg, who ruled on behalf of Rurik's young son Ihor. Oleg and his troops moved south along the road from Vikings to Greeks and established control over key cities. The chronicle says that in 882 he cunningly lured local rulers from Kiev, as colt and deer. After killing them, Oleg occupied the city. As Kiev at that time significantly outperformed other cities in the region in terms of its scale and significance, it became Oleg's new residence, new capital. 882 is considered the date of the founding of a new state, Kievan Rus, because two important centers, Kiev and Novgorod, were united under the rule of the Rurikid dynasty. The origin of the name Rus is still debatable. Some researchers emphasize the autochthonous origin of the name in the Middle Dnieper region, because there are still many rivers with similar names, and as we know, hydronyms are one of the most stable geographical names. Others speak of Scandinavian or Finnish origin. In any case, Byzantine and Arab sources clearly distinguish between Rus and their subordinate Slavic tribes, in particular with regard to their traditions and customs. The founding of Kievan Rus in 882 created a dualism of political power in Eastern Europe. From now on, the Dnieper tribal unions paid tribute to both the Khazars and the Kiev rulers. They increasingly began to join Rus' military campaigns in the Black and Caspian Seas. Chronicles report several such expeditions to Constantinople. The first of them, recorded in Byzantine sources, took place in 860, even before the conquest of Kiev by Oleg, and is associated with the previous Kiev ruler Eskold. At the beginning of the 10th century, Oleg made several new successful expeditions to the Byzantine capital and managed to sign a lucrative trade agreement that allowed Rus to sail freely on the Black Sea and trade in Constantinople. Ihor's attempts to replicate his uncle's success in the 940s ended in complete defeat. Rus' large fleet was burned to the ground with the help of Byzantine super weapons, Greek fire, the main ingredient of which was oil. Both Oleg and Ihor carried out rapacious attacks on the Caspian Sea, on the rich lands of modern Azerbaijan. To do this, they had to break through the lands under the control of the Khazar Khaganate. Apart from these campaigns and trade relations, the Chronicle does not report any other significant information about the first two rulers of Kievan Rus, which completely fits into the Viking customs of this time. Alexey Tolochko even compares the early Rurikids with a trading corporation that tried to economically develop the lands of Eastern Europe and monopolize Scandinavia's trade with Byzantium and the Middle East. Thus, at an early stage, the dependence of the Slavic tribes on Rus was manifested in only three components: the annual payment of tribute, poliudia, the supply of warships to Kiev, and participation in joint campaigns. Tribal alliances have been preserved as political units for centuries. They had their own rulers, aristocratic elite, certain laws, customs, and beliefs. Chronicles repeatedly report tribal wars against the Kiev princes. This picture was further complicated by the ethnic heterogeneity of the local population. In the sphere of influence of the Varangians were not only Slavic, but also Finno-Ugric and Baltic peoples, who inhabited mainly the northern lands of the newly formed state. The influence of Kiev's rulers on the ground intensified only as a result of Princess Olga's administrative reforms in the mid-10th century, and only her son Sviatoslav ended political dualism by defeating the Khazar Khaganate in the 960s. Sviatoslav's youngest son, Volodymyr, actually managed to turn Kievan Rus into a centralized state during his reign at the turn of the 10th and 11th centuries. I will tell about these gradual transformations, as a result of which Kievan Rus became one of the most powerful states in Europe, in the following episodes. And now, I say goodbye to you. Until next week.